Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Good morning and welcome in, Grant and Danny. 106.7 The Fan. Thanks to Byron for keeping us up to date. It is Thursday morning. We are live. We are local. We appreciate you tuning in.
We had the battle of the show last night, Grant. We barely even spent time on it, realized it. The George Washington University, where I attended.
That's right.
Matriculated, and versus the George Mason Patriots. Neither program having a banner year, I would say. It's one of those someone had to win games. But at the Smith Center, GW got themselves a W. They lost to Richmond this past week. So I'm not sitting here patting myself on the back too hard. I will not be sore in the back or hand region. But that was last night. I sort of barely remember that it was happening, and then it did. And
the
then
Grant
I was
and Danny
like,
Classic, as they call
that's
it.
That's right. I was like, I better. This is me gloating, I guess. I don't know.
10:30, Redskins are keeping their band together, it looks like, with their coaching staff. They have not yet made any changes. At 11:15 this morning, Mel Kiper's got the Skins taking Baker Mayfield at number 13. We'll tell you what we would think about that. We'll get your thoughts on the potential of Baker Mayfield replacing Kirk Cousins as Washington's starter, pending what happens with the 8 car. But let's start the show with the Wizards after a awful performance last night.
Yet another.
On the road in Charlotte against the Hornets. They lost by 24 points, 133-109, to a Hornets team that is just not any good. They are 8 games under 500. The preseason conversation, as it has been the last few years, was that they were about to be solid. Dwight Howard comes over. Kemba Walker can score the basketball. They are who they've always kind of been. A team that the Wizards should go on the road to and handle with ease. They seem to always play the Wizards well, though. Here are some of the specifics from last night in a game that was probably rock bottom for the Wizards this season. And this has been a year defined by defensive ineptitude. No team has allowed more consecutive 100-point opponent performances than the Wizards right now. Charlotte came into the game 17th in the NBA at 105 points per game and 21st in offensive efficiency as a team. Yet they scored a season-best 38 points in the first quarter. They scored 77 points in the first half. That is more points than the Wizards had allowed in a half.
Embarrassing.
Since 2006. And they end up, because they scored nearly 30 in each of the quarters of the second half, getting to 133 for the game, a season high for the Hornets, a franchise high in Charlotte. Just a ridiculously inept performance by a Wizards team that just didn't try hard enough. They do really well defending the three-point line, believe it or not. I don't know if people would guess that, but I saw this morning they're number one in opponents' three-point percentage.
I wouldn't have had that, yeah.
The Hornets last night went 15 for 31, largely on uncontested three-pointers. They shot 48% from deep.
It's usually penetration and layups. It's not usually being able to handle any kind of screens or rotations. It's guys get easy looks against the Wizards. And what happens when you get easy looks, you get confident, then you get into rhythm, you knock down shots. I'm over being furious at this group. I was furious when they lost to Utah by 40. I was furious when they lost to Brooklyn by 37. A garbage Brooklyn team, by the way, with a bunch of kids. You want to make it Wolf season? You want to have aspirations of doing something? Pipe down. Don't say a word. Play better. This is nothing more than a bad culture that's rearing its ugly head, and the man in charge has been in charge for 15 years. They've got no depth. The backup point guard spot is there, Eleanor. They keep trying to put bargain basement guys instead of drafting their own assets and having them come up. Guys like, I don't know, Jordan Clarkson, who would be the perfect player on this team, but it was sold for cash. Tim Frazier doesn't even play anymore. You're counting on bargain basement guys who were out of basketball last year, like Mike Scott, to buoy your second
year. Mike Scott's not their problem.
He's not their problem. He's been
really good.
He's been great. But that's my point, is you've got to hope for these flyers on the wall that somehow bail your butt out. A couple years ago, it was Drew Gooden doing it. Where is what Boston has? Gordon Hayward goes down. Jaylen Brown steps right in. Everyone mocked Jaylen Brown. All of a sudden, next thing you know, that guy is a sensational player for the first half of the season. Jason Tatum steps in, fills a role. You get the point. I'm not going to go down Boston's roster. What I am going to do is say, this is the same old crap, where you get a honeymoon period for a new coach. Randy Whitman got him to play defense for a little while. Then they went back into this lull. Scott Brooks got him excited and fired up for a little while. Now they're back into this lull. This is an organizational, cultural problem, and it is toxic. It has been here for too long. Too many chuckleheads, too much half-assing,
well,
too much satisfaction.
Who's the chuckleheads now? Who are those guys? I mean, that's kind of the story of yesteryear. Supposedly, they cleaned that
up. With Blatch and Nick Young and guys. To me, you know, Kelly Oubre, the idea that he's somehow this untouchable guy, every outfit is documented and it's all fun and games because he's wearing shades and has like a t-shirt with graphics on it.
But I would say he's been a good player for them this year. His development's been terrific. He's a bench player, a scorer who can defend, who's long on the outside. He's a good wing player.
He's had some nice moments. Certainly has. He's also a guy that, again, he seems very content with what it is.
So he's the issue?
I don't think he's the issue. I think he's systemic of the issue. It's a cultural problem to me. And it starts with Ernie Grunfeld. And the fact that he's got a job for life is, to me, the big deal. When guys were cutting up before, literally cutting up, by the way, talking about suits and throwing them in the jacuzzi, when guys were doing that, when guys were fist fighting each other, when this organization settled, they continue to settle. It's embarrassing that this is what they're able to put forth on the court every night.
I agree that there have been several times over the course of Ernie Grunfeld's career where he should have lost his job. To me, this is the convenient thing that Wizards fans that don't like him do. And if you're a Wizards fan, you probably shouldn't like him because he didn't do a good job for a long, long time. When it's going well, we say, man, Ernie's built a pretty decent roster. And then as soon as they start to struggle again, it is the default that people fall back on, which is not necessarily just that it's his fault, because you can make the case they're not good enough on paper. But they are way better built than 25-20. They are way better built than losing to the Hornets last night the way that they did. That's not an Ernie Grunfeld problem. It's just not. Something on the floor is not right with this team. Might be roster construction. Might be that they don't have enough dogs on defense. Might be that their stars don't like playing enough defense. I don't know. But I don't think last night losing to the Hornets the way that they did has anything to do with the talent that they have or don't have on the roster, or that their bench isn't good enough. They're way better than the Hornets, and they got outclassed. And they get outclassed by sub-500 teams almost every time they play them this year.
Lost to Utah twice without their two best players. Brooklyn two times.
One
at
of those
Atlanta.
Games to Utah was like a whack.
Yeah, it was.
Too.
That's the worst loss of the season. They lost to the Suns, who were hot garbage. Lost to the Lakers in that LeVar Ball, let's talk junk to him. And
that's
they were
right.
Embarrassing.
And by the way, going into that game, as you said, there was a war of words where you had all the motivation you needed because you're talking and John Wall's talking and we'll show you. And next thing you know, you lose to an abysmal Lakers team. Just a tumultuous, bad, awful team that beat you. Cannot happen. And it does over and over again. I get the sense from the Wizards, and I have for a while, they feel like they've arrived. And I love John Wall. I really do. I really, really like Bradley Beal. I think he's an awesome dude. He seems like a righteous, great kid. He's come on our show, and he is a good interview.
Yes, have a career year.
Every time he does an interview, first thing he does is thank God. I mean, he seems like a really humble, down-to-earth, good Christian guy. I like him. I think that he and John Wall love their press clippings too, though, because they haven't accomplished anything yet. You hear about them being the best backcourt in the NBA all the time, other than the Golden State duo, and you got nothing to show for it. And I understand that it's a team game, but the NBA more so than the NFL or some of these other sports, if you've got two guys that good, they should be able to keep you from having games like this two or three times a week. They should.
So on court, again, I think the problem is Ernie Grunfeld and its organizational one. We've got this history here. But if we disagree on that, that's fine. On court,
well,
here's...
it's not even that we disagree. It's that it's just convenient to always do that, and then we never get to talk about the actual on-floor problems.
Well, I
so
say
dismiss that and get to the on-floor
stuff. Fine, because that may not be changing. I would say that it's very inconvenient, but I'll go back to it. On court, John Wall's averaging career worse since his rookie year. To me, this is about his knee. He's been healthier lately and has been better lately, but his shooting... a percentage that he hasn't been as bad as, again, since his rookie year. Three-point percentage is down. Assists are down. Turnovers are up. All the bad numbers for John Wall, with the exception of blocks. He's blocking over a shot per game, which is remarkable, by the way.
Are is down. He really?
Yeah.
He averages over a block per game?
He does. And again,
That's insane.
It's a dubious honor. Not dubious, but it's an insignificant honor. He's the best shot-blocking point guard, perhaps, in NBA history.
He claims that that's like the title he wants, too, yeah, which is cool.
Which is all good. The chase-down block is exciting. It's one of my favorite things he does. But all his good numbers are down, all the bad numbers are up. I think it's 100% knee-related. It's one of those things that's bulky at times. Sometimes he's spry, feels good. Other times it's not.
What about Beal?
He's been better since
Beal's not shooting as well as he had.
So Beal from three, I think, is directly dependent on John Wall. And when Wall's not doing Wall things, that means less catch and shoot opportunities for Beal. So if, when Beal's shooting threes off of plays that are run for him or shooting threes off of his own creation, not as good as transition, he goes to the wing, John Wall draws all the defense in, kicks it to Beal, rhythm three. That's when they're at their best. That's happening fewer and fewer times per game. So I think some of the good percentages from Beal, he's been shooting better from three lately, by the way. Percentage has gone up to 36%. He'll be close to his career norms because he's too damn good. His all-around game has evolved, and we've talked about this before. He's an all-star. Should be an all-star, whether the numbers work out for him or not. Otto Porter has become more and more passive, and I think that's injury-related. You got his hip that's leaked last year, leaked into his back. He doesn't look very comfortable. Markieff Morris gets three fouls, plays 15 minutes a night, doesn't give a you-know-what.
Well, part of it, too, is when you talk about Beal's issue, when he's kind of somewhat made by John Wall, so is Otto Porter. I mean, a lot of these guys need John Wall being spectacular
to be the best
versions of themselves because they are kind of dependent on the wing and waiting on those open looks that he's going to get them. Another thing I saw, and I think it was JP pointed this out this morning on the Junkies, you mentioned Morris and Gortat in the front court. Those two guys last year averaged 25 and 17. And JP's point was now this year they're averaging 19 and 14. Drop off of 6 points and three boards is pretty substantial. But you could just tell with Markieff Morris, he's not passing the eye test. That this guy is not the same committed, basically hungry player that he once was. And there's two versions of him. The version that got run out of Phoenix, who didn't care that much.
Yeah, that's this one.
And then the guy who was here and fighting with every Celtic every time we turned around.
And so
last year at one point.
And you can see why he's been moved on from a couple times over. It's this. People get tired of this act. A guy like that should absolutely be dominating more than half the opponents he goes up against. Sometimes you get a great athletic power forward that's going to give him fits because they give everybody fits. The number of times teams can go small against the Wizards, he should be able to go down in the post and tune guys up at his leisure. He can knock down shots. He's an active rebounder, can be. He's a willing defender at times, but he just looks so passive, like he doesn't care. And then the center position where they've got a ton of cap space sunk has been an abject disaster.
I think they're just awful defensively. And I think most of their problems can be chalked up to that. And they have been for the majority of the last several years with this core. I think a lot of the guys on this team aren't very good defenders, and they don't play good team defense. Let's take some calls, though, on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines next. Fairly rare opportunity kicking off a G&D here. Talking Wizards for you guys to chime in after what was just a ridiculously unimpressive performance last night. The Wizards are stuck in neutral, and maybe they're even working in reverse at this point. What do you think the problem is? You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny, 106-7, The Fan, on the heels of one of their worst losses of the season. The Wizards dropping a 133-109 game last night in Charlotte. Gave up 77 points in the first half. They have not done that since 2006, a franchise record for the Hornets. 133 points in regulation, also a Hornets team record. Bradley Beal described Scott Brooks as being pissed after the game. He should be.
Yeah.
His team is not playing defense. They are not exerting effort on that side of the ball, and he's going to apparently make some changes because of it. We're taking your tweets as well. I'm at Grant H. Paulson.
At Funny Danny for me.
Our buddy, Guylo Ren, who's changed his name to Third Down War Daddy, which I love because that was what Kirk called Pierre Garçon, remember?
That's right.
But he's a War Daddy on Third Down.
That's what Kirk said about Pierre.
Wall, Beal, Oubre are your only building blocks. Otto is an average player who didn't get better from last year and has the hips of an 80-year-old. You've overpaid big men of the early 2000s who have zero offensive skill set. Keith was a gamble. You lost.
Largely agree with that. I would say I think Wizards fans overrate Oubre because the idea of him is great. He may be their only asset. I'm talking about trade. Now, I would love to be able to keep him around and develop and have him grow into something. Two problems. One, you paid Porter, as Third Down War Daddy mentions. You paid Otto Porter. And two, you keep forfeiting draft picks, mortgaging against your future. You traded a draft pick to get Gortat. You traded a draft pick to get Markieff Morris. You, at a certain point, need to select a player and have him grow into something. You have to have that happen way more often. You need five more Tomas Satoranskis to turn into decent players. It's what they're always doing. They're always mortgaging just to be okay. The Keith gamble and lost is 100% correct. Short term, it was fine. Now this is what he is.
Yeah, and I liked the gamble on Keith, for the record. And I think you did as well, going back to when they made that trade and the return they got initially. We were both big on that. We thought that was well worth it. Now it's no longer looking like it was, and he has not been the same player. Richmond John says, have the Wiz turned on the coach or tuned him out? I don't think so. Says, at times it looks that way to me. Amongst the other problems you mentioned, that might explain them playing down to bad teams. My question would be, what were the Thunder under Scott Brooks defensively? Were they ever a good defensive team? I remember Serge Ibaka was one of the best defensive players in the NBA.
They were. It's a similar thing has kind of plagued them, fits and starts. There were moments where they weren't locked in. It was frustrating people when he was in OKC because you had these two gifted offensive players, obviously, really three at the time when you had James Harden coming off the bench. But they gave up too many points at times. Scott Brooks has never been known as a defensive wizard, I will say.
That, to me, is a little bit of an issue. Not that you need someone who is defensively expert with how they go about their business, but I think you need someone who's defensively proficient because this has been something that's plagued this team for many years. I also don't want someone who's just going to be here and yell about defense all the time, Randy Whitman,
yeah,
who has no ability of drawing up offensive sets.
I saw what that looked like.
It's the front court, says Oz. Otto has a $25 million contract, hasn't hit double figures in six of his last eight games. It's entirely dependent. Keith is giving no effort. Gortat is another dependent player who can't defend the rim anymore. So Gortat, lack of defense of the rim, a problem. Also, next to zero offensive game. The number of just 12-footers that he has no chance of making. You know, those just awkward-looking shots. And I see him at Capital One Arena whenever I do get to go to those games, and I haven't been to one all year. But before the game, he's sitting there practicing, and he's hitting all those shots from, like, the elbow and closer. Soon as the game starts, he's going to go 3 of 17 on those
still
shots.
Masonry. Again, I think that's directly wall-related. Their pick and roll's gone down in effectiveness for a number of reasons. But, again, to me, I think the front court's exactly right. You're getting so little from Porter, from Markieff Morris, from Jan Mahimi, from Marcin Gortat. The only guy that's played well in the front court, honestly, is Mike Scott.
Scott's been great.
He's been transcendent at times.
Thank goodness for him.
100%.
Let's go to Kevin in Culpeper on the Fan. Kevin, what do you make of the Wiz, just 5 over 500?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I think what I'm going to say is might not be popular, but I don't believe. I think the biggest scam is that Wall and Beal are all stars. I don't see it. They're way inconsistent. And I think, and not even that so much, I think that their biggest problem is they have zero leadership. When you lose to teams like they're losing by, like one of you all said earlier, them two by themselves should prevent them from getting blown out by 30 points by loser teams. Should never happen.
I agree with that second part of your statement completely. In basketball, when there's five guys on the floor and you can play 34 minutes if you're Beal and you can play 38 minutes if you're Wall, there is no excuse. When the two best players in that game are on your team, you shouldn't lose by what they lose by to these bad teams. I do disagree that they're not all-star caliber players. In the case of Beal, I think he's one top five, two guard in the NBA. In the case of Wall, you're talking about a special talent. But the second point to me is correct. Their presence should prohibit games like last night.
So let me counter. It's not that it should never happen. Because Cleveland, who's going to the finals, has lost 9 of 12.
It can't happen as often as it has.
It can't happen as often as it has. That's the takeaway. Because it's going to happen. Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan get blown out. I mean, a bunch of guys that are really good. The guys in Portland, Lillard and McCollum, get blown out. That's going to happen sometimes. It absolutely is. The frequency with which it happens, the alarming number of times they gave up a huge number of points or got blown up by Brooklyn, blown out by Utah without their best player, blown out by this garbage team, Charlotte, last night. Too many times, it's embarrassing.
They lose more often than they win against bad teams. How do you make sense of that with those two players and the caliber supposedly that we've got here? Drew in D.C., what's up?
Hey, fellas, how y'all doing, man?
Hey, Drew.
I want to make a couple of points, man. I want to make, three quick points. And first of all, we all agree Ernie Grunfeld, they need to, get him out of his rocking chair because he always do just enough at the midseason to just save himself for next season. And they mortgage off draft picks. Second of all, John Wall and Bradley Beal are not ready to be leaders. They didn't have that, even though they had a good year last year, you felt them go down after the Paul Pierce era. Paul Pierce set the tone for them and had them playing on a level. And my next point is, John Wall, I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for this. John Wall, to me, he's all speed. John Wall, to me, is almost topped out because he's almost he's a seasoned player now. He's not a rookie no more, so that mid-range shot should be there by now. He's a number speed. After John Wall's speed goes away, John Wall can't give you anything. He doesn't play on-the-ball defense. He always tried to do the wraparound steal, and them guys are not going to be competitive because you have – because the two guys are not, you know, they're not holding up their end of the bargains of being leaders of playing defense.
Appreciate you, buddy. Let's go to Vaughn in Alexandria. What's up, Vaughn?
What's up, Grant, Danny?
Hey, dude.
So I'm going to try to take this from a big picture standpoint. I'm not going to just talk about the last night loss, because that's what a lot of your callers are doing, when half of them couldn't be more completely wrong. Bill and Wall are all-stars. We can't debate that. How's he still scoring 20-plus if he has nothing but speed? I mean, come on, let's be real with it. What I'll say is that the Wizards, overall, just need a veteran who can – they need a clutch player. If you look at most of their losses throughout the season, they lost in the last 3 minutes of the game where they gave up big leads. They don't have a big who can switch on the pick and roll. If they can address those two concerns, the Wizards are just fine. I'm not going to just panic like everybody else. I've seen most of the games. We struggle late down the stretch, and we lose a lot of games that we were up big in. So I'm not going to panic. The Wizards are just fine. Just address those two needs. Thanks.
Thanks, buddy. They've given up a lot of leads. Wall and Beal's fourth quarter numbers, where it basically becomes hero ball, are pretty alarming. They've been bad. That kind of speaks
to that.
They were
really good last year, though,
yes,
based on the numbers I saw. So that might be an outlier, but it's still a problem.
Yeah, but it absolutely is. You just need more from your core guys, and that's Porter, that's Morris, that's Gortat, whether it's, you know, Mahimi off the bench, whatever. You simply need more. These two other two guys, these two all-stars, are carrying them every night. If one guy falters, if Wall has a bad quarter, next thing you know, they give up, you know, 40 points and only score 20. It doesn't look good right now.
Did you see my boy Chris Dunn from the Bulls fall on his face last night?
Scary, dude.
Apparently,
really scary.
His teeth dented the wood.
Oh, God,
when he landed.
Makes my skin crawl.
He hit so hard after a dunk. And he made it 112-107 with a dunk against the Warriors.
He's a good player.
In Chicago in the game. But then he just landed on his face. It was one of the scariest collisions with the ground I've seen.
Chicago looks so smart, by the way. Everyone made fun of them.
Killed
with that Jimmy Butler trade. All of a sudden, Chris Dunn can play. Mirotić can play.
Yep. It's a pretty good roster they're putting together. And people were saying they were going to be one of the worst teams in the last few years this season.
Yeah, they're not good by any stretch, but it's instead of being the absolute apocalypse where they'd win 10 games all year, they're frisky, man. At one point, they had a stretch as good as anybody in the league.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Looks like the Redskins, just by being quiet while everyone else is making moves, are deciding to go with continuity. Should we be praising them for that? We'll get to that on the Fan. Grant, Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Albert Breer of the Sports Illustrated site, MMQB, Monday Morning Quarterback, will join the show at 11, one of our favorite NFL regulars here on the program. And next hour, we're going to get into Mel Kiper saying the Redskins are going to draft Baker Mayfield at number 13 overall. I already see it, Danny. I've been calling this for a few weeks. This is a business decision.
You've been on this train, man.
They move on from Cousins. They go with one of the biggest names in the draft, very likely Baker Mayfield if he's there. Fans are chanting his name at training camp like they once chanted RG3's initials. And here we are.
Cue the Michael Scott no clip. It's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea.
At 11:17, that's a little tease of how Danny's going to feel about it. I think my take could surprise you. But probably not.
Are you going to have, what was Bickle's term this morning? I thought it was so good.
His term was great. He said a sneaky smile.
A sneaky smile.
Because he doesn't want people to know he's smiling, so he just kind of sneaks a smile
out. He sneers, yeah.
In places he doesn't talk about at parties, that he's kind of excited about Baker Mayfield. Speaking of the Redskins, it is now January 18th. They played their final game of the season on New Year's Eve. That was well over 2 weeks ago. We came in right after that day, and we said by presumably mid-January, we're going to know what the direction of the coaching staff is. Jay Gruden's press conference the day after the season ended led me to believe they were making changes. Just reading between the lines, he didn't say anything specifically that made me think, okay, Ben Cutweek is done, or they're going to move on from Greg Minuski. But he was not in any way adamant that he wasn't making changes. He
nothing
didn't come out
glowing,
and say,
right?
This is our coaching staff. We didn't make the playoffs because of injuries. I'm keeping my guys because I know they did a good job. There was no real endorsements either. So I took that to mean there's going to be major changes to some of the higher-ups on the assistant chain on this staff. That has not happened. And we're at a point of the offseason, presumably, where it would have by now. Which leads me to believe, Danny, that Kotwika is safe of the special teams coordinating role, that Minuski is safe as the defensive coordinator, that Matt Kavanaugh will return as the offensive coordinator, and they're not going to be doing anything really different with this staff, which would surprise me.
Sounds like they're keeping the whole band together. And I've asked a couple reporters that have come on with us about sort of this overarching theme, right? And that is basically this. Not only are the coaches coming back, but it sounds like there's no desperation to get Zach Brown signed. It sounds like there's no desperation to recoup some of their own free agents. All they've done, their offseason business thus far, is lost one assistant strength and conditioning coach because he's going to go with his dad and do his Gruden. And then the assistant offensive line coach has gotten a job somewhere else. That's it. And they've signed Quentin Dunbar to an extension. That's their offseason business to this point. They're allowed to do whatever the hell they want. They could approach Zach Brown right now with a massive contract offer. They could go talk to Spencer Long, to a million other guys. It seems like they're very content. And the overarching theme is we're actually really close to being pretty good. It was injuries that derailed us this year. And that's a fine way to think if you're right. If you run this band back and it doesn't work out, oops. To me, there were glaring issues before the injuries happened. There was this isn't exactly a juggernaut here that's going to be playing in the NFC title game anytime soon. You still had some miles to go. You were competitive, and that's admirable. But I still think you need a little bit more here. And the idea is they seem very content, just as they were very content with their front office and the entire structure because they promoted a bunch of guys, gave them nicer offices and new titles, and fired Scott McLuhan the way that they did. They wanted everyone to know how smart they were. Well, now they're doing the same thing. It's very whisper quiet in Ashburn, which I generally prefer, by the way, to dramatics and nonsense and lawsuits and whatnot.
See, that's what I think we've got to click on here is this idea of continuity that we've all been ravenous for years. I mean, this is something we've had a hunger and a thirst for and we're finally getting. And I'm wondering if we should be heaping praise rather than looking at it with a skeptical eye. I mean, because I look at the decision to stick with this coaching staff, namely Kotwika, Minuski, Kavanaugh as the three lieutenant assistants under Jay Gruden of the three phases of the football. The same way I look at what am I going to do at quarterback? What am I going to do at head coach? Can I do better? Is kind of the question you have to ask yourself. Do I need to do better? Which might be a different question. You can absolutely do better than Greg Minuski as a defensive coordinator with some of the names that have come available. You've got a DC who was in Seattle and Chris Richard, who's had a couple of really good years. You've got a defensive coordinator who came available, to my knowledge, they didn't contact, who last year they were moving mountains to try to talk to, and Paul Gunther from Cincinnati, mm-hmm. even though the thought was right away he was going to go be on John Gruden's staff. When we talk about quarterback and Kirk Cousins, we always come back to, is someone better available? And the answer is always no. Is someone who can better devise and design an offense, who can better work with quarterbacks available as a head coach than Jay Gruden? The answer is probably no, which is why you stick with those guys until you can do better. I think you can do better than Ben Kotwika as a special teams coordinator. I think you can do better than Greg Minuski as a defensive coordinator. And that's probably a fair assessment based on their performances here. Do I think you can also be what they have been the last couple of years? With those guys, do I think they could make the playoffs at 10-6? Absolutely. But what are you striving for? What is available? What can mm-hmm. you bring in here? Those are the questions I think that need to be asked. But I also go back to just continuity. And I think that this is much preferred to what was their operation in the past.
Yeah, I don't want, you know, 1 year doesn't go the way you want. You fire everybody.
Exactly.
That certainly doesn't make any sense.
But I guess the million-dollar question, though, Danny, is are you just kind of keeping a bunch of guys who are probably going to get you into the middle of the pack around? Because that's a dramatic upgrade from what they were. They've gone from being one of the dregs of the league in a terrible operation to being pretty mediocre and middle of the pack in the NFL.
Yeah, bottom five in wins over the last 20-plus years. And that's not hyperbole, that's information.
And now over the last 3 years, they're probably somewhere between, if I had to guess, like 13-16 in the NFL.
Right in the middle of the pack.
Drafting somewhere in the middle of the first round. That is an upgrade.
It certainly is. And now the ability to go from terrible to okay, it's not easy, but it's much easier than to go from okay to good. The next step is the hard one. The initial step of not being an embarrassment is people are capable of doing that. Lots of teams have gone out of the toilet and been able to walk around and pat their feet dry. This is now the tipping point, right? You've climbed out of the dark ages where you had no draft picks and your quarterback that you traded the whole world for didn't work out. That's why you didn't have layered talent, or that was the excuse anyway, salary cap penalties and otherwise. You've climbed out of that hole. A lot of the guys that were drafted in those selections are now on their second team or third contract or persona non gratas in certain places. This is now the time. Can you take the next step? Their inaction and their quiet here, they're sort of mum's the word. Again, one extension for Quentin Dunbar. A couple assistant coaches have moved on to greener pastures. That's the limit, the extent of their activities. There doesn't seem to be any hurry, any desperation, whatever. There's a confidence about what they're doing. I think it's misplaced, personally. I think there's a happy medium between saying, hey, we're the Spurs, let's just keep the whole band together, versus we should probably be able to upgrade in a couple spots because it's not good enough. There's a happy medium without fire, you know, blowing out the whole staff every 2 years. There are upgrades that are available. They're not taking them. Again, the fact that they still don't have a general manager to set that kind of organizational paradigm is the greatest crime against Redskins fans.
Well, they have a general managing role. They just do not have the football person named a general manager that you and I want.
Right, that's
in
what
fairness.
I mean.
Because Bruce Allen operates in a lot of ways like a general manager. Doug Williams runs the front office, supposedly, like a general manager would. Here's the question at 800-636-1067 on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines. Should we be praising the continuity that the Redskins have exuded over the last couple of years? They blow out Scott McLuhan, and they basically promote from within a lot of their own guys. They kept them in-house. Now, this year comes and goes with a lot of injuries, and rather than doing the rash thing, the crazy thing that a lot of fans wanted, fire the coach, fire all the coordinators, start over, they've kept the head coach, and it looks like he's keeping all of his assistants. Should we be endorsing this behavior as something we looked forward to in the future for many, many years? We'll get to your calls at 800-636-1067. Next, we're Grant and Danny. We're talking to Albert Breer of MMQB on the playoff games that are being played on Sunday, Championship Sunday coming up just a few days away. That's at 11. You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny on The Fan. We are down to the final four in the NFL. We'll get previews of both championship games. Albert Breer at 11 o'clock. And at 11:18, Mel Kiper says the Redskins will be taking Baker Mayfield at number 13 in round one. We'll react to that. Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines are open, 800-636-1067. Skins are sticking, it looks like, with their coaching staff. Minuski, defensive coordinator. Kavanaugh, offensive coordinator. Kotwika, special teams coach. Do you like the continuity and the decision from Jay Gruden to carry this over another year after a season where they were pretty close in a lot of games and got pillaged by injuries? Rick in Fredericksburg, what's up?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think the continuity is that Gruden has to stick with the continuity. Is I think that there's like a hidden secret in NFL is that don't go here unless you're a young up-and-coming OC or DC who wants to make a name and then get out of there as quickly as possible. The mess that the higher office people have made, I don't think established guys really want to go there. In my personal opinion, I think that they really messed Cousins up. They didn't give him anything to work with this year, and he still had great numbers. And
true. He absolutely did. Thanks for the call. My concern with continuity, for continuity's sake, so to speak, is when you carry over an operation just so you can point to the fact that you did, should or why will you expect a different result, I guess is my question. Now, what is Minuski's defense if not for the injuries this year? If you didn't lose Josh Norman for a couple of games and then he wasn't the B version or C version of himself after that, if you didn't lose Jonathan Allen and Matt Ioannidis wasn't playing with a cast on his hand for an extended period of time, let's say Phil Taylor doesn't go down, obviously your defensive line's a lot better. But I would say that about any defensive coordinator, that they would have been able to have a better season if those guys stayed healthy. Part of the expertise of coaching is to still get something out of a group when you do have a lot of those injuries. I guess for me, I don't want to allow the mistakes of the past to determine what I do this offseason. And I think that's what's happening. I think Jay Gruden, if you gave him some truth serum, would say, listen, Danny, I'd love to go get fill-in-the-blank defensive coordinator who became available. I can't because it would be my third defensive coordinator in four seasons now. I can't do that because I moved on from Jim Haslett to Joe Barry, and I was wrong. And then I moved on from Joe Barry, and I had to go with Greg Minuski because after we moved on from Barry, we couldn't get any of the four guys we wanted to be our DC for the next 4 years.
Yeah,
I get the sense that he's just decided it's going to be a bad look, or I'm going to put myself on the line and my head on a platter if I go get another defensive coordinator this year. I don't care about what you decided in the past.
Right.
You got stuck with Minuski because a couple guys didn't want to come here. That's not your problem.
Yeah, you missed the Wade Phillips window. This is so I don't feel any sympathy, but I see your point. I do think, by the way, that's a factor. I don't want my fourth defensive coordinator.
Do you think it's the biggest factor? Because I think it's, I would say 80% of the reason they're not changing the defensive coordinator, if I had to guess, is because he doesn't want to make another change.
I'd say it's lower than that, but not insignificant. I would say it's probably 45 or 50%. I think that's a big part of it. I think the other part, though, is they want to give the illusion of stability. In this era of instability, where they have not committed to the quarterback, and we don't know who's going to quarterback them next year, they want to give the illusion that they know what they're doing. They were desperate for everyone to know that they knew what they were doing as Scott McLuhan saga played out, as they lied and pretended that he was in Indianapolis at the combine. As that whole bit of nonsense and the lawsuit and whatever else has come and gone, they basically wanted to let everyone know, no, we get it. We're very competent. Look at what we've done. We're promoting Eric Schaefer. We're promoting Scott Campbell. We're promoting Doug Williams. Everybody gets a new title and a little bit, an extra comma on their paycheck. To me, continuity, it's one of those buzzwords that everyone likes. When you find and self-identify something that works, again, I always point to the Spurs or the Patriots or the organizations that are always really good, you've got a formula. I want to keep Mike Tomlin intact. I want to keep what Pittsburgh does intact. I don't want Bruce Allen's cronies intact and just call, and say, look, we're the same. We're not changing anything, so we're the same as Pittsburgh. No, you're not. And everyone knows that you're not. But you're trying to do this. I would say, and you said this before too, look at what the good organizations do and act like them, and let's see if you end up being one. Do what Seattle does. Do what Pittsburgh does. Do what New England does. Whatever, right? You do your best to emulate that. This is a warped, twisted, contorted version where you get to take one sentence out of a book and say, keep the same people on the same staff. Ah, look, we're doing that.
Yeah.
We're doing the same thing. Nothing else that they do
is the
same. Are
they the right people?
Yeah, nothing else that they're doing is the same as that, but now they go, look, Our facilities are inadequate. We're 2 hours away from our home stadium. Everything about our organization isn't very good, but we're keeping the same people intact. That means we're the same. Look at us. We've arrived. That's the part that drives me crazy. Is the back padding and the quiet confidence that they're demonstrating. To me, this is a golden opportunity to try to take that next step, and I don't see the desperation to do it.
I wonder though how much of a landing spot the Redskins are in the eyes of other coaches. I wonder how much intrigue there is in coming here right now.
It's a good
because
question.
Jay Gruden did just get extended, which you would say would help, but it was only 6 weeks ago that we were talking on this show about all the reports that he could be in trouble.
Yeah,
at the
if he
end
loses
of the
these
year.
Last couple games, dot dot. Yeah.
So I'm gonna go saddle up with Jay Gruden when he might be out after a year. No, thank you. What's the best way to ensure that you can win in this league? Go to a stable organization that's got a quarterback of the future. The Redskins don't have that right now under contract without Kirk Cousins. So I'm going somewhere where I might have a coach who's starting a year on the warm seat and Colt McCoy is the number one passer in the organization. I'll probably wait for another DC job somewhere else.
Right.
That might be part of it too. I just don't know how many suitors they'd have for these openings. Albert Breer of MMQB previews the conference championship games with us next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever,
or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.